Thanks very much. Thanks for coming. As you just said, my name is Mark Lind. I'm a graduate student at the University of California in the Plant Sciences Department. And we're going to look at how to manage phosphorus fertilizer to reduce algae and maintain water quality and sustain yields in direct seeded rice systems. Some of you may not be familiar with direct seeded rice or California rice, and so I'll just give you a little bit of overview there. There are about 200,000 hectares grown annually in the Sacramento Valley. We get some of the highest yields in the world, about 8.5 tons per hectare. And rice tends to be grown on heavy clay soils, usually vertisols and entisols, neutral to acidic in pH. And even though we are talking about managing phosphorus, I want to emphasize that most fields in this region, in this system, aren't phosphorus deficient, probably less than 5%. But we're looking at it as a means of algae control. So just keep that in mind as we look at some of the rice response moving forward. I want to orient you to the production system as it relates to what we're looking at. And this is a field that you're seeing, and the irrigation subdivisions within that field are referred to as checks commonly, and that's what I'm going to call them. So when you hear me say check, this is what I mean. So let's look at some of the early season management events that might affect what we're looking at here. Sometime mid-March, after the winter rains are done, growers begin breaking ground. They do some chisel, plow, a few passes with the disc. They do a little land planing. That's followed up by fertilizer application, sometimes by ground rig, sometimes aerially. Phosphorus fertilizer is rarely incorporated very deeply into the soil, if at all. So you've got a lot of phosphorus right near the surface. That's followed up by a pre-plant flood into which pre-germinated rice seeds are flown. And this is the direct seeded system. This is in contrast to the transplanted systems that are common in most of the rest of the rice growing world. So depending on the depth of the water and temperature, you get emergence above the water about 2 to 4 weeks later. And it's becoming more common for growers to experiment with a nitrogen top dress 3 to 5 weeks after that initial plant. And this might be an alternative timing that we would consider throwing some more phosphorus on if we were going to change the timing from pre-plant. So with that ready availability of nutrients and light and water and no competition from the plants yet, floating algae can start to form early in the season. And what we're mostly talking about is a multicellular cyanobacteria called Nostoc spongiform. And when you get a prevailing wind that moves through the field, those mats, those floating mats, tend to converge onto one side of the check or another, which can actually dislodge the seedlings, physically remove them, and obviously block a lot of light and create big gaps in the stand. So with that in mind, our hypothesis was that if this cyanobacteria is P limited in direct seeded rice systems, as has been shown in the literature, if we just change the timing of the phosphorus fertilizer application, we might be able to limit the growth. So related to that hypothesis, we had the following objectives. We wanted to see whether alternative timings could reduce in-field water phosphate concentrations early in the season, and consequently the Nostoc spongiform occurrence. If we did change it to a different timing, sometime a few weeks later, what would that do to water quality? And finally, what would that do to rice productivity? And we investigated the first two objectives in a single experiment, and the third in a separate experiment. I'll present the first experiment first. So we measured water phosphate concentrations in checks that either had phosphorus supply pre-plant or not at all for about 34 days after flooding. And we did this in a total of 11 checks that had no phosphorus applied, and 13 checks where it was applied in 6 different locations. They weren't always adjacent, as is depicted here, but where they were, the zero was always upstream. In addition to looking at the phosphate concentrations, we also recorded a relative algal abundance measurement. And we did this by taking pictures every 10 meters around the perimeter of the check, and then assessing those photographs for the presence or absence of the algae, and expressing that as a percentage of the total photos taken. So this is a relative measure of algal abundance that we're looking at. All these data were log transformed and modeled using a mixed model with random coefficients to deal with the background phosphorus levels per check, and also the repeated nature of the measurements. Then in these same checks where we had no phosphorus applied, the growers we were working with applied a delayed application sometime between 16 and 34 days after planting. And these weren't spatially independent, so we didn't compare them directly to our other treatments, but we did use the same model to characterize the change in phosphate concentration in those checks. So let's take a look at some of the results of this. We'll first look at the checks where we had pre-plant application and no application of phosphorus, and we see a considerable amount of variability in both cases, but we did also have a significant intercept estimate here. So our model's saying that we had about 0.11 milligrams per liter of phosphate P in the pre-plant checks versus 0.04 milligrams per liter in those without. And this was highly significant, and so we're getting a lot higher concentration as a result of the pre-plant, which is not all that surprising. So what's that going to do for algal growth? And if we look at our relative measurements, we see also a very significant difference between the pre-plant and the zero. And while we don't have a half saturation constant estimate for this particular species of nostoc, there is one for another species of nostoc within the literature. 0.093 milligrams per liter is the half saturation constant. So using that, it would seem as if relative to the pre-plant, the algae in the zero treatments are phosphorus limited. So this is good news. If we can move the application to sometime else in the season, we might be able to limit that algal growth. What's that going to do to water quality? So taking a look at the checks where we applied it 16 to 34 days application, this is about up to 28 days after that application, we see some really high concentrations. And these would be of concern. A general threshold to keep in mind for water quality in this region would be about 0.1 milligrams per liter. So especially in the first week, we're well above that. The variability didn't give us a lot of confidence in our intercept estimate, but we did have a significant rate estimate. So what we see is, despite these really high numbers the first week or so after that application, they decreased really rapidly. And so let's look at that on the same scale that we were looking at the pre-plant and the zero treatments, and we get within the range of those values within about a 2 to 3 week period. So we are looking at potential water quality problems if you didn't hold the water on your rice fields. But if you hold it for 2 to 3 weeks, you'd probably be able to get those values down to below thresholds of concern. And this is consistent with some of the studies in China and Korea that are looking at similar things. So I'm going to move away from the water phosphate and the effects on algae for a second and look at the effects of alternative phosphorus timing on rice growth, because ultimately we don't want to hurt those high yields by changing our phosphorus management. And we looked at the effects on rice growth in fields that were phosphorus deficient, which are hard to find, like I mentioned. There's less than 5% of the fields. But we established a deficiency based on a regional threshold of 6 milligrams per kilogram of sodium bicarbonate extractable phosphorus. Another thing to note in these particular fields was that we had relatively low pH and high iron fraction, which obviously plays into your phosphorus availability in a flooded system. So in these two locations, we established 6 blocks where we applied 25 kilograms per hectare of P in the form of triple superphosphate. And we either did this the fall after the previous crop, after they harvested it, disked in the straw residue and flooded, prior before the fall rains and flooding. Or we did it pre-plant in the conventional manner that I described earlier. And then our delayed treatments were either 35 days after planting, which is about mid-tillery, or 49 days after planting, which is about 10 days before panicle initiation. And we also had a control where we didn't apply any. So let's take a look at some of those results. And I want to just mention that we combined the two locations because there were no location by treatment interactions. And this was just modeled with a general linear model. So the first thing I'd like to point out on this graph, which is depicting phosphorus uptake, is that we had about 70 to 80% of the uptake occur after panicle initiation. So the vast majority of your uptake is happening second half of the season. And for that reason, we saw no difference in uptake in these delayed treatments relative to the pre-plant treatment, whereas earlier in the season they were deficient. Looking at the fall, we did have less uptake in the fall treatments than we did in the pre-plant treatment, but we also did have more in the fall treatment than the control, which tells us that some of that fertilizer, phosphorus fertilizer, is getting into the plants in the fall treatment. But keep in mind this is a highly deficient field. So on a field with a little bit less deficiency, you might not see this difference. And also, if you just applied a little higher rate, then we didn't apply a particularly high rate of phosphorus, you might not see this difference either. Obviously, the amount of fertilizer uptake is going to affect your yield. And even though the 35 and 49 day treatments each took up about the same amount of phosphorus, they were differentiated from each other because there was no yield difference between the 35 day and the preplant, whereas the 49 day treatment suffered about a 6% yield penalty relative to the preplant, as did the fall treatment. So looking at maybe why that could have happened, we can see agronomic P use efficiency over here on our y-axis, which the 35-day and the preplant were not different in, whereas the 49-day treatment was significantly lower than the preplant, as was the fall. And also, this is significant at P equals 0.1, not at 0.05, but the 49-day treatment had slightly higher straw concentration than the 35-day treatment, which seems to indicate that some of that uptake didn't get to grain filling. It was a little bit too late. So to summarize, applying phosphorus fertilizer preplant is going to lead to a higher occurrence of algae. If you move that to sometime later in the season, you can reduce that algae, but you can also cause potential water quality problems. But holding the water on your fields for 2 to 3 weeks ought to mitigate those concerns. From a plant perspective, 75% of your uptake is happening after panicle initiation. However, you can apply it a little bit too late. So our recommendation would be sometime between when the plants emerge above the water and mid-tillering would be an ideal time for this delayed application of phosphorus fertilizer. And alternatively, if you were in a field that didn't have phosphorus deficiency, you might be able to apply it the previous fall or apply it at a higher rate as well if you were in a field that was a little bit more deficient. I'd like to thank and acknowledge the California Rice Research Board, UC Davis Department of Plant Sciences, USDA, who all had a hand in supporting this research financially, and all these individuals down here who had a real hand in getting it done. So with that, I'll thank you and take any questions you might have.
Questions?
Yeah. When I'm referring to being deficient as late in the season, yes. So so there are some thresholds of concern in terms of P concentration, and yeah, they would fall into that deficiency category for our region.
But if you walk into the field, are you able to identify that this field or this area of the field?
Absolutely.
Is deficient because of plant symptomology that suggests?
Yep. Yes, you can.
Any other questions?
All right, thank you.